Bill Frisell, a guitarist with an altogether different sound, with Where Do We Go? It's from his 2001 album, Blues Dream. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we have a lot of ground to cover today. First, of course, we note the passing of two legends, and we'll talk about them. They deserve some time, because they both achieved some significant milestones, not just for themselves, but for a genre and for people coming into their world, which they created and helped to refine. So we'll talk about that as well. Today, as you know, is the great hiding of the sun. And we'll talk about that too. But I want to talk about a continuation of a story that was given to us and shared with us with such great authority, and I want to respect that by making best use of his time, and that is George Webb, who, as a citizen journalist with Crowdsource the Truth, has been one of the first to raise pointed questions about a particular individual, or, and now it has spread to be a particular group of individuals, and questions about how they operated under the radar, raking in tons of money, but most importantly, raising yet more questions about how they came to be where they are and how they came to escape detection, and detection for what. Well, we do know that the lead figure here is a man named Imran Awan, and he operated independently. He owned his own business, which was in the computer field as an IT engineer. He brought in his brothers. They're all born in Pakistan. And they managed to wheedle their way, especially through the leader, Imran Awan, to the highest levels of government under the guise of working as tech aides. As we learned before, they earned salaries way, way higher than the standard pay for IT professionals working in that capacity. They were making more money than members of Congress. And they supplemented that by actually working in Imran's own private company. So this was a clear conflict of interest from the beginning. Most specifically, Imran Awan worked directly for the now fired former chair of the Democratic National Committee, Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And she took quite a bit of time to fire Imran Awan and his brothers and his sister-in-law and his wife, who also worked in Imran's company. Although other members of Congress, when they were notified that there was something wrong with this company, they immediately fired him. But it took a while for Debbie Wasserman Schultz to fire him. In fact, on July the 24th, he was arrested at Dulles International Airport on bank fraud charges. And then just last Thursday, he was formally indicted. That is, it was a formal charge now. And the charge is for bank fraud as well as other charges. In all, he has four counts against him. His wife also has a count against her for fraud. So this is a very heavy story. Remember, I told you about it. And so we have to tackle it in pieces. The questions are, where will all of these connections lead? We know that there are some materials missing, some equipment missing, the same kind of equipment that the feds were looking for from Hillary Clinton. George Webb told us in the last installment his visit to a particular address where he was led to believe he might find something there. And he said he saw telephones. It's been so long since I have had one, a BlackBerry, and found computers and so forth. And the question is, were these pieces of equipment the equipment that people were hunting for when Hillary Clinton's shenanigans came to light? So we are going to follow this thread a little bit longer today, and we will get closer to, I think, one of the most incredible stories in a long time, certainly since Watergate. And with that, George, welcome once again.
Yeah. Utrice, I love being on your show. Thank you for having me on. And just a couple of quick follow-ups. Everything changes, right? Since we talked last, obviously the new indictment came down for Hina Alvi, the wife, and there's going to be additional documents that we present, or I have already presented on Twitter, about the Hawkshead home. There's two homes that they had the bank fraud charges. One's the Hawkshead, and the other one is the Sprayer home. They didn't mention the Hawkshead home originally in the first set of indictments, but that's the home I went to go. They have 12 homes in all that they were doing the bank fraud, which is just the beginning. But that's the one where I went and saw the Marine, and the Marine told me, I never saw the equipment. The Marine said there was a pile of BlackBerries, a pile, and about three or four laptops, which could have been used as a way of syncing to these BlackBerries with Wi-Fi, and then you would be getting all of the email for the different 80 congressmen that they worked for, and then there was also a router. So that now that's all the Marine told me that night. I did a report. I gave it to Luke Rosiak that evening. I gave him the information for the Andre Taggart is the gentleman's name. The public hasn't seen Andre Taggart's face yet, but I believe I'm Malia Zimmerman of in Washington or with Fox is going to do the first face-to-face interview. I hope Andre relates that information the way I remember it. But anyway, so that's the update there. With, as far as Crowdsource the Truth, I've decided to go a little bit more street level. I've decided to go a little city sun. I decided to go street, retail politics, retail journalism. For all those who aren't aware of Utrice starting City Sun in Brooklyn, I'm taking a page out of the Utrice lead. I'm really trying to get a neighborhood pick up with a neighborhood paper in the Bronx. I've tried with the Bronx Free Press, and I'm also trying with the Harlem Times. But I really want to go back to that City Sun type tradition where you have a retail politics where somebody can come in and say, you know, here's my concern. And I know that sounds quaint in this internet age, but I believe it's marrying the two. We kind of went from one end of the spectrum, which is all print, now all the way over to all digital. And I think there's a happy medium in the middle where you still look your constituent in the eye and they come in and they say, I don't have any money to pay you, whatever. Can you take these, blueberries instead of blackberries as payment? I mean fruit. I don't mean take stolen blackberries. But, you know, I mean, I really want to do this. And this is something that's very important to me. And I told Jason and Trish this, and I love that folks at Crowdsource the Truth. But I really need to do this. So I've spent the last, since we talked last, basically every day in the Bronx. To follow up this story. Now, there's other stories I'm obviously chasing here, but I'm also looking to pick up with a neighborhood, sort of a city sun. I can't describe it any other way.
Oh, thank you. Actually, one of the things I liked about it was that practically everybody I personally trained. Mm-hmm. And I ran a free, no-cost journalism training program. And you see many of the faces of the graduates on television now, but I still think they ought to quit and do some real journalism.
that's just my opinion.
This is a really incredible story, yeah. And you can tell from the very beginning. And you need people with guts, people who are fearless to tell it, because we know. I can tell you right now. You know you are putting your life on the line for writing these stories. These folks are not playing. And they're evil, and they're wrong, and they insist that the American people are stupid and would believe just about anything they're told. And this story is heading in that direction already. We've discussed some things that anybody in an editorial room would think a lot about writing a story, because there's so many people, you know, that we have covered. And what is also interesting is the names keep cropping up in different arenas. So it's like following a ball of veins and muscles and whatnot to kind of disassemble. It's going to be very hard. So let's pick up from where we left off.
Okay.
Where would you start?
Well, I think today's story that broke that supports the thing I reported on your show the last time was they were taking deliveries at that home. So remember, I'm the one saying that the Hawkshead home was the storehouse of this information, of these blackberries, of these laptops, and of these printer routers or these routers. Well, today's story broke that Imran ordered over 150 iPhones and iPads to be delivered at that address for February 2016. Now, this is even before the election and before the primaries in the Democratic primaries before the Democratic convention. So now I have tied Imran and Abid and Hina and Natalia, the whole crew, to not only stealing secrets in Congress by stealing the PDFs out of the Blackberries through the sinking, but also stealing money from Bernie Sanders and progressive candidates by adding an S to the company that was taking donations called Act Blue. So as you were typing your donation, which I did 5 times for Bernie, I was a big Bernie supporter and I was on the Bernie phone banks and so forth, that by Visa Wands adding this S, the money was going into an account controlled by Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And then it was moved into Amalgamated Bank in New York, where I've done a lot of stories. So that's probably kind of the next step. And just 2 days ago, the Daily Caller was saying, Luke Garosiak was saying that this is no connection whatsoever to the DNC. The other, the part that takes the money for the congressman is called the DCCC. They're in the same building on Ivy Street. And they were saying, no, there's no connection. Fox was saying, no connection. Now today, this drops. We're 150 iPhones. And the reason being, now, if it was just a guy who was had a local store and he was buying 150 iPhones, that would be one thing. But what happened was, first, he's making $160,000 a year. So you would think he would be trying to sell phones after working on Congress for 14 years. But the second thing is he's buying these phones for $499 because the trip signal, the trip wire in Congress for miscellaneous expenses is $500. Okay. And these are $800 phones. So somehow the CDW, which is a government contractor, GSA contractor, is selling these phones to Imran. And remember, there are phone stores in the bottom of both the Senate and House. Now, if you've already committed bank fraud, if you've already created 5 or 6 different straw employee accounts to defraud the government for, of payroll, and then you've done the same thing on the for the Congressional Credit Union, remember the Congressional Credit Union is under investigation. Their CEO just recently resigned. The Wands were questioned in that investigation in September. Steve Wasserman, who's running the prosecution, from the as the attorney general in D.C., has not ever stated that the Wands were part of the September questioning in the Federal Credit Union. He's not stated that the federal grand jury was convened on November the 13th involving the Wands from last year. So all this information is yet to come out. Well, these documents are public now, but it's not gotten very much MSN play. So that's where we are today, is these key dates. And we're going to find more invoices by CDW delivering to the Hawks at home.
What is of significance, you told us, is that these phones are the kinds of phones that members of Congress are assigned. Even the president, Barack Obama, earned a bit of reputation for his devotion to his BlackBerry, which is specially coded and which is said to be more secure than most phones on the market. And that's why they recommend these BlackBerries be used. And most of them were assigned to people, members of Congress and others who have secure jobs, not secure that they won't get fired, secure meaning that they are operating in a world that requires security on their phones. And so because the BlackBerries were considered the most secure phones available, they were assigned to members of Congress who sit on committees that are dealing with highly sensitive and security matters. And therefore, they felt a bit more confident in dealing with this kind of material over a BlackBerry as opposed to another phone. Now, the direct implication is that since the IT guy, this is Imran Awan, his brothers are with him in his company, which is a direct conflict of interest. They're working with him in a private capacity with his company, but serving members of Congress. The thought that we examined before was that it is quite possible that they had access to highly confidential highly confidential information. And it is quite possible that they may be working for more than the U.S. government. They are in a position to acquire the information, download whatever it is, because they had security codes and they had security clearance as part of the job, unquote. So it is not even yet known, or at least it hasn't yet been discovered, who exactly Imran Awan and his brothers were downloading or passing information or sharing very, very highly sensitive information with. Has that gone anywhere?
Yeah, so this isn't a decision that's made by a low-level IT person about what phone is to be used. It's actually recommended by the National Security Agency, which is, you know, 10 times the size of the CIA. You know, and this is something they do every day. Edward Snowden is now the most famous NSA employee or ex-employee. There is a special phone that the NSA hardens all the ports to make sure that none of the ports can be attacked, you know, by people putting thumb drives or any other kind of device to try to read information. It's protected electronically. It's got all the protections in terms of the memory, any kind of virus that's coming into the phone to try to fish for information, all that. It's a $5,000 phone. It was available to Hillary Clinton from the first day she stepped in the seventh floor office at the State Department. She refused that phone again and again and again and again, and wanted her own special staff, a special staff called Anthony's Trusted Staff. Believe it or not, Anthony Weiner's Trusted Staff, people that Anthony Weiner had had associations with over the long period. And Anthony Weiner was in Congress from 1999 to 2012, that he configured the phone with his staff. And there are emails in WikiLeaks where she is directing Huma to have Anthony's Trusted Staff configure phones. And if you want to just Google WikiLeaks and Anthony's Trusted Staff, I know that's not the most favorite thing that you want in your Google history, but you will find that email. So this was decision was made at the highest levels of the Democratic Party by the person running for the Democratic ticket, Hillary Clinton.
So this was like a shadow government, essentially, because this is something that the government, a high-level government official, would grant such access, or certainly would know that this activity is ongoing and may assume that, you know, she's the lead Democrat, a lead Democrat, that it was okay by the Democratic Party, i.e., the Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She must have known about it.
Yes, she did. She cashed the check from all the Bernie-crats that the money got moved into her account. I'm sure she's going to say that it was, whoops, I didn't know what the amount was. But she, I feel sorry for her in a way, because she ends up kind of holding the bag for this spy network that it was in place before she became the DNC. The person that put this in place was Terry McAuliffe, the current governor of Virginia. He's the one, and when he was running the DNC, put this whole spy ring in place in 2004. So poor Debbie Wasserman Schultz inherits this thing. And so she, you know, that same system that he used, you know, in terms of the spying and so forth, she inherits it. Anthony Weiner was the one working with the guys doping the phones. And now she's left holding the bag. So in a way, I feel bad for Debbie Wasserman Schultz in this. But she did participate and she did cash the check, as it were.
I don't feel sorry for her at all. I'm sorry.
Everybody says that.
This is stuff a dedicated crook will do. I don't feel sorry for her one scintilla.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say we've gotten so far about the lay of the land. Where was this information going? It couldn't just be going to one place because they're using, well, they have to use codes that communicate with each other. So where was this information ending up specifically? Do you know?
Sure. Yeah. We have to look at who lived in the homes that were with Imran Awan and the companies they started together. That really is how you start tracing this. So his wife is Hina Alvi. She ends up working for a company called Suparco. At the same time, she's in Congress. She's going to the Pakistan to these confabs for Suparco, S-U-P-A-R-C-O. That company sells satellite secrets or sells satellite technology to all over the world for industrial applications as well as military homeland security type applications. So directly, mainly to OPEC nations for earth resources and finding, you know, metal and so forth with different techniques they have and oil, but then also for watching the population, if nothing else. I mean, it's a system called NADRA, N-A-D-R-A, and you can Google WikiLeaks for the word NADRA, and you can see Julian Assange making comments about the actual surveillance system used in Pakistan. Now, remember that her mother is also the interior minister and a worldwide satellite expert in Bangladesh, where Cynthia McKinney, your and I's friend from Bangladesh, that was East Pakistan, as you know, and the Pakistanis have always felt Bangladesh is still East Pakistan. And Saraya Begum is her name, and she's was again living at the house. So when you have a company that's formed called NanoSet, N-A-N-O-S-E-T, between Saraya Begum and Imran Awan, okay, it further establishes a link between this nanosatellite information and Pakistan and Bangladesh. Okay, furthermore, there's an actual confab, IT confab, in the heart of Pakistani intelligence services university in Lahore, Pakistan. It's a confab called NanoSet, N-A-N-O-S-E-T. So what is happening is the NADRA, this is just one application, but the NADRA surveillance application uses a biochip in the phone to connect with a biochip identity card so that it can always geolocate you, so that the satellites, these little nanosatellites are only 4 inches in cube. They're very inexpensive. They're shot off at 100 at a time now. And they burn up in the atmosphere, but they last, you know, a certain length of time. But they're very good at very close surveillance. So using this NADRA system now is being sold all over the world through Suparco. And you're going to have other people selling it through other companies. But there's a clear business link and a familial link, and they're all in the same home together. So it's this satellite technology, both uses for oil exploration, and then also used for military applications as well as homeland security applications. And it's going to be the end of this whole story. It's going to be David Petraeus and Hillary Clinton setting up these private equity plays to take advantage of these technologies.
I've been seeing pictures of Bill Clinton and Imran Awan together at social events and so forth, and they look so chummy. I was wondering whether it is a possibility that Imran's implantation into this job might have been a deliberate thing, because he appeared not to have been vetted, or certainly not to have been vetted carefully, and whether this was a quid pro quo arrangement between the governments as well. I mean, they can't, if they had looked at him carefully. He has three brothers there. Two of their wives are there. The mother is involved, and she is this worldwide specialist on, what did you say?
Satellite technology.
Monitoring. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, is it possible that there was a rogue element that brought in a spy, and or a series of spies that would, who agreed to work to mutual advantage on both sides? And that explains how much money he was allowed to make.
Yes, the rogue element here is Terry McAuliffe, who's the current governor of Virginia. And he's used his good friend Andrew McCabe as his cover to shut down the Hillary investigation for her emails, the Huma server investigation, which is where the Imran information went to here in New York. And then he has also used Andrew McCabe to shut down the investigation in the Awan brothers to make sure that it didn't become an FBI investigation. So all along the way, it's got Terry McAuliffe's footprints all over this. And of course, Terry McAuliffe and Bill Clinton have been lifelong friends.
Yeah, he paid for his the purchase of his home. He backed the mortgage for them.
Well, you know, you're going to hate me for this, so I always make excuses for Bill Clinton. I have to admit, I like Bill Clinton.
But I have absolutely no sympathy for him.
I know. But I always think that somehow he gets talked into these things almost. I do have proof that Obama is completely walled off from this. I have proof with Jack Lew and Dennis McDonough completely walled off chief of staff and the Jack Lew, who's the Secretary of the Treasury, doing all these deals, are completely walling off Obama from this. That I can't say. Now, with Bill Clinton, I can't say that. But it's sort of like watching your dad go to jail. You know, you're trying to pretend that the stuff isn't true. But there is a lot of footprints, I have to admit. And I do have a strong affinity for Bill Clinton. I read all the books, and he's just been an amazing person. When you meet him, he's just an amazing person. And I don't get that feeling from
Hillary
Clinton.
I've met him. You know, he's a very affable man and so forth. And not too hard on the eyes, and women go crazy about him because he is a consummate crook. He knows how to charm people. He knows how to get you to believe the sky is gray when it actually is blue. He has finessed it, and he's smooth. Yeah. He's a smooth kind of manipulator. So to marry both the purposes or the idea of how this setup could be used between the Clintons and with whether Congress knew about this operation or not, whether this was a two-sided operation. The main thing is a lot of information was passed to and fro. There's no question that much of it, if not all of it, was highly sensitive and confidential. But you have to ask yourself the question, what would be in the interest of the United States government to put itself in a position where they could possibly be teammates with some other government in trying to sell information or use information? I mean, what do you suspect is the arrangement?
Well, I would hope that that Pakistan and Bangladesh weren't the trial for Nadra. I would hope that this next generation surveillance technology, this geolocation, where literally there's no way out. You'd have no minute by yourself. It's the ultimate George Orwell 1984 nightmare, where you can't even have one private moment to yourself. The government knows your exact longitude and latitude at all times. And that is currently how everyone in Pakistan and Bangladesh live, or Pakistan anyway, under the Nadra system. You can't get any government benefits, anything like that, without your Nadra card. And that system, that Nadra system, is being introduced over and over and over again in all these different countries in the Middle East, as well as Africa, and as well as a lot of island nations. So you would hope that the CIA and David Petraeus is not currently working on a clandestine plan like they did in the 60s in the 70s with the chaos plan that they had in the United States, you would hope. But it does beg the question that if you let the Department of Defense have 10 different agencies that are a part of the policing organization with the FBI and 25 different other federal agencies, in this thing that we call the JTTF, which is the Joint Terrorism Task Force. Now, this JTTF was supposedly a bunch of fusion centers put in each state. It was going to combine state and local information with government information, federal information. But they didn't sell the fact that there was 10 different Department of Defense, including Army Intelligence, which was David Petraeus' area, on this staff. I was very recently involved in a case where the FBI admitted geolocating me when I was trying to expose a uranium trading rat line in the port of South Carolina. So this is very personal to me. And the government admitted in their own testimony geolocating me. Now, how much longer till the Nadra comes our way? And oh, by the way, the other wife that hasn't been mentioned yet, Natalia Sova, works with a bank in Ukraine that used to work in the old days of Iran-Contra with Pakistan, a Pakistani-Ukrainian connection called Nadra Bank, N-A-D-R-A Bank. So the connections here are very strong. So, and that's what I worry
about. It's very frightening, too. You know, recently Hillary Clinton has been disbursing her funds, the funds to that were raised to support her candidacy. She's been dispersing them already. Is there any connection between the kinds of money that Imran Awan was earning as a so-called, quote, salary, unquote? He's allowed to earn a government salary despite the fact he owns his own company. He's making more money than members of Congress. And money is floating around. I imagine we will see on that list people that he also had served because, of course, people were running for office, people like Bernie Sanders. Is that going to surface anytime soon?
Well, I think the DCCC hack is going to surface. This is where the congressmen collect their campaign contributions. I think that's going to surface very quickly. Again, Imran Awan has the iPad, has Debbie Wasserman Schultz's password on May 4th, when they're ready to do the money transfer from the Bernie folks to the DNC, to the Hillary folks. So the only one with access, and the part that hasn't come out yet is there's this group of Chopras that worked on Obama's 2008 and 2012 campaign, and they have every desire to go with Bernie to be, you know, the CIO in 2016. As a matter of fact, one of the Chopras is already the CIO for the White House at this time. And Rajiv is running the campaign like he did in 2008 to 2012. And then there's another Chopra running the DCCC. So the people who had the most to lose in the DNC leaks, there's two sets of leaks, remember. The first was the Chopras, and the people who had the most to gain was
That's
the Awans.
The Chopras as in Deepak.
That's how you spell the name, but it's not related to Deepak Chopra. But Rajiv Chopra ran the incredible 2008 and incredible 2012 media-driven campaigns. This was the one where you got out the vote with Facebook, and you could learn where to vote and engage, you know, via, you know, a Facebook app, that type of thing. That was all Rajiv Chopra. And then his brother, and I can't remember the other brother's name at DCCC, kind of was doing the same thing for congressional candidates, these Bernie-crats, where they were doing these phone burning, you know, or phone, where you do these burning sessions where you call as many people as you could one day. So he was kind of taking that same technology that they had developed for Obama and doing it for what I call Bernie-crats. And then you have, obviously, you know, the other Chopra, who's the CTO of the White House. Now, they had the most to lose if the Awans came in with Hillary. And the real story here between the DNC leaks, and hasn't come out yet, and Seth Rich is just a throw, it's just a distraction, is the Chopras were the ones that had the financial incentive in that first set of leaks to say, here's the money. Follow the money. Here's the accounts. Here's how much it says we got through Act Blue, and here's how much actually went into Debbie Wasserman Schultz's account. If you look at the first set of leaks, the first up till May 25 leaks, that's what it's about. All seven of the people email that they did was just the financial leaks. The later on, after the convention's over and Hillary's elected, it's more the sour grapes thing. The Awans are in. Yeah, Hillary's going to win. And then it was just Podesta screwed us. We hate Podesta. He's running a crime organization through SEIU and Amalgamated Bank. And it was more of a spiteful release there. And that, I believe, was the FBI working, the FBI field, FBI here, working with the Chopras, and an informant named Yared Tamin. So again, I'm breaking it on your show here first, Eutrice. That's going to be the story of the NC League. You heard it here first.
Wow. I thank you. That's a great honor to break a story. I'm really, this is a very, it's a very sad thing in a way that people show such disregard. You know, the people who are supposed to be making the laws and whatnot that we are forced to follow, they break the law with abandon. Let me ask, at that time when this thing started, Hillary was running or was about to declare her candidacy, but she had a mind to run. What links are there, if any, between the Hillary Clinton campaign and people who were being put in particular places so that should she need them, they'll be ready and available, which might explain the exorbitant salaries that exorbitant salaries that Iman Awan was earning, and the others that also worked with him, including his two sisters-in-law and his mom. Am I seeing too much here, or was this a kind of thing? Because the Clintons tend to plan ahead a lot when it comes to running and making even more money. Did you see anything that suggested that it was beginning to be organized even at that early time?
Very much so. Most people are not really familiar with the UAE and the different emirates, the seven different emirates of the UAE. But Hillary Clinton ends up working with this Qassim, which is the smallest emirate, the seventh emirate, Qasim. Interesting enough, the port in Pakistan, where most of this contraband is shipped that I track, is the port of Qassimi. It was named far before the seventh emirate of UAE. But Hillary was especially friendly with this Qassim. And the previous leader, the way the emirates work is each one has sort of a king, a sultan or whatever. And then when that person dies, there's this natural hereditary progression, right? And she put all of her bets on this younger brother, and then to oust the older brother. The older brother says, you have turned this port here in the RAC, it's called. It's a combination of R, A, and K, but it's abbreviated and just known as the RAC. So just think of the RAC like a gin in the RAC or whatever. That you've turned this into a hotbed of shipping to ISIS, weapons to ISIS, drug smuggling, money laundering, basically the bottom of the bouges as far as hell on earth, right? And that's what he accuses his younger brother of. That's the person. That's the person that Hillary Clinton supports. I believe that Imran Awan and Hina Albi are blood, somehow connected through blood to the seventh emirate of UAE. That is the reason why I believe he holds a diplomatic passport with the UAE. That is why he is allowed to ship things in containers through a diplomatic courier, diplomatic container, which are not checked. The ones that are checked for radiation are checked at the port of Qassimi, or the port of Qassim in Pakistan, not in the United States. The person who made that arrangement, Terry McAuliffe. Terry McAuliffe has made the arrangement of not checking in our U.S. ports for things like depleted uranium coming in. Rather, and you can check this through the IC3, to check it via a video monitor in Virginia that he controls. So we're checking all of our potential diplomatic containers coming into the U.S. through a television screen in Virginia. And if you look into the people who work at the port of Qassim, you can see relatives of Imran Awan. So this isn't a good situation where you're putting, remember, depleted uranium, after it's been processed, is very, very radioactive. So it's they call it purple haze or purple rain. If you pick Jimi Hendrix or pick prints on how you want to visualize this. But if you throw this stuff in the water, 30 feet underwater, it glows purple. So it's purple rain or purple haze, right? Now, what they are doing with this, we believe, and we have a lot of deep contacts in terms of giving us information, they're actually formulating this spent uranium from Iran into depleted uranium weapons, ammunition, in a former factory in Pakistan on the border of Kashmir, called the Pakistan, the Punjab Ordnance Factory, POF. It's left over from the days of the British Raj when the British had their military weapons factory there. And we believe that Imran's father, Mohammed Ashraf Awan, has a financial interest in the weapons factory in POF, at POF. And they intimidate, currently intimidate the lower state below them, Punjabi, right below Punjab, which is Sindh, S-I-N-D-T. And they're intimidating the people of Sindh, and they're intimidating the port of Karachi and the port of Qasim to ship these DU weapons into the ports of the United States. The reason why this is so important is these become the stuff of dirty bombs. So that is what our professionals call a clear and present danger. So this is not a bunch of IT people hacking phones of senators and so forth, not just selling satellite secrets, but also perhaps engaging in an illegal uranium trade through the diplomatic loophole, is what it's called, through the diplomatic loophole. And that is the part that scares me the most. Not really scares me. That's the part I concentrate on in my reporting. I just happen to pick up the spy ring and the car theft rings that carry these DU weapons, just as an aside. So there you have it. It needs a full review by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, by Trump and staff, to see what do they know? Which congressman, what Blackberries, what are the serial numbers, what were the emails, so that we can make a full intelligence assessment of what happened.
We also need to know what happened or failed to happen at the United Nations. This is the kind of stuff that should be discussed. This is the stuff of deep inquiry. I would have imagined that somebody would have raised it as a possibility that these things are happening, and happening with great cooperation at a sub rosa level. You know, people don't know what's going on, or people who do know that it's going on have very tight lips. They're not saying anything.
Well, here's where I get to cheer for Obama, because I believe Obama actually did make a proposal about this weapons trading. Especially depleted uranium and also highly enriched uranium, HEU uranium, and the other ones abbreviated DU, where he wanted to have an open discussion among all nations about how do we categorize and watch this stuff and basically create an open dialogue, and that was shut down. He was someone hobbled him in his discussions here, and it became this blackmail or black market practice that we have now that we're only finding out about through reporting, through individual informants, as well as sometimes being a target of the actual system itself.
Is Israel at all involved in this, especially on the Middle Eastern side?
Well, you're not supposed to ask about my art dealers in Europe. My art dealers and antique dealers. Those aren't, all those folks in Europe, you know, Yatrice, they're just art dealers and antique dealers.
That's all.
There's no Mossad there.
No problem.
Mossad. Look the other way. This is not the Mossads you're looking for. So, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I think Mossad is much more practical than people think, and they have this feeling in Mossad is, you know, baby stealing, and you know, in Lebanon and baby stealing in Yemen, and you know, engaged in organ harvesting and all these black arts and stuff like that. And that's just not the case. They're a bad Mossad as well as good Mossad, as well as all the other intelligence agencies. There's good Pakistani ISI. We just need to engage with those that would hold ourselves to a higher standard and not use every dark trick for their individual advantage and do and act more in the interests of their country.
The reason I asked is that, you know, the prime minister is well known to have an affinity for these kinds of operations, underhand and operations involving myriad ways of killing every Arab in the world. So I thought maybe his name has surfaced in the middle of all of this.
Well, his name has surfaced, and I deal with people who are literally heartbeats away from Bibi, but I want to assure you that Bibi's not the bad guy you think he is. Okay. And I don't know. I don't think I'll be able to convince you listeners of that. But there is this desire.
No, I naturally assume, well, a while ago, you know, that he was caught running nuclear parts from the United States with a false company back to Israel. He was arrested. Technically, just about any time he lands in the U.S., he should be arrested and charged. But, of course, that's been forgotten. It's so long ago, they made up, they kissed each other, and they made up, and it's no longer an issue. But I still hold to this: in the nuclear age, everything is possible. And you can't believe anybody and say, well, he has a record of being a decent guy. Well, when it comes to war, nobody is decent. They throw that. That's the first thing to go out the window. They are interested in winning, and if not winning, causing massive effect bring the enemy down.
I'll just say in defense of Bibi here.
It's okay. I mean, that's no problem.
Yeah. In defense of Bibi, I will say this. There were things that Israel needed to do at different points along its history where it was much more threatened than it is today. You know, you look at the 67 war, and you look at the Yom Kippur war and the 73 and all these different things. Israel was a much different situation, you know, where seven nations surround you and have declared war on you simultaneously is different than the situation is now. Now, people talk about, you know, his ambitions for a greater Israel and genie energy and, you know, taking over the Golan Heights and all that. Yeah, well, Cheney and Dick Woolsey and Larry Summers and, you know, Rupert Murdoch and Rothschild. Yeah, okay, you know, they've got an energy company. It's Genie Energy. They want to take the Golan Heights. At this point, I think the old Mossad opinion would be, let's negotiate. Let's take it. Forget about the organ harvesting and all the ISIS and all this, you know, support of ISIS and arming ISIS. Let's just, if Israel wants a chunk, let's just get it out in the open, get on in the UN, say we want it for our security and just deal with it, you know? And I realize that that may be sound very Zionistic, but it's better than having these covert wars with all the murder and organ harvesting that we've had in Aleppo and the sarin gas that Mike Morrell has been firing off and then trying to blame it on Assad. It's just all these, you know, these low CIA bouges, you know, kind of pattern and practice, rather than just saying, hey, we're good businessmen, we're strong, let's cut a deal. You know, Assad, you're not going to be able to afford to mine this or drill this. We'll give you 40, we'll take 60, and then we're done. And I think that's, you know, and we'll throw in 10% for Tillerson to keep everybody happy. I think that's a much better
way. I don't know
way.
You will do so well in the United Nations.
Well,
you're
I'm just taking it.
But I don't know.
This is what Obama wanted to do with the uranium trade. He just wanted to bring it above board.
Yeah, well, there are some really lousy and horrible intentions here wrapped up in all this professed intention of negotiating. But look, George Webb, you have taken us yet several yards further down the road on this story, and it's just it just has so many moving parts, you know. You got to keep track as to where it's going, although you have a pretty good idea of where this will end up. And I am so grateful that you are doing such a thorough job of investigating each minor and major moving part so that we get to understand what is going on here. And it doesn't just come out of nowhere or disappear to nowhere, but that we are keeping tabs because of the good work that you are doing. So I want to thank you so much for that. We'll, of course, find a way to get you back when the balloon bursts, if not before, and we will apprise the listeners of what's going on in that neck of the woods, but it is not all innocent at all. There's a lot to this story, and I did describe to you that this was going to be one heck of a story, and for once, I'll congratulate myself for being right.
There you go. Well, Yatrice, thank you. It's always an honor to be on your show.
Thank you so much. So we'll talk when things are shaping up. You'll give me a ring and let me know how things are going on your end. But in any event, we'll keep in contact for the next chapter. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your interest. And tomorrow we'll talk about some really good people who did a lot before they took off from this world. Bye-bye.